Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for the week of July 23. Today is the 23rd of July.
Yes, it is.
Got right on top of that. The date is important so that if people get backed up on
their podcast,
they can go back and know when. I guess they could just look at when it was uploaded.
Well, you know, one day we're going to be so famous that people want to know when exactly we said.
What we said. Yeah.
And your dating of every show.
Right.
Is important for history.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's a historical thing.
Right.
For prosperity. No, I'm so prosperity. Tired. Not prosperity. What's that other thing?
Posterity.
Posterity. So, and in that vein, we've thought long and hard about what we should talk about today. So we want to have a short South Carolina update. And then we're going to talk about something very important.
Yeah.
After that. But I need, in light of the South Carolina update, I need more of the hashtag Remember Binghamton bumper stickers. Mm-hmm. I was given two of them, and yeah. I would be willing to pay money to have them. I put it on my car. It's very, very cool.
Did we get one yesterday?
Or? Yeah, I put it on my car.
Did you?
Yeah.
You mean our car?
Our car.
I didn't see it.
I did it after you left church.
Oh, okay.
And I think it looks pretty cool, but nobody. What I like about it is driving around Binghamton, nobody in Binghamton is going to have any idea why I have a hashtag Remember Binghamton.
Because most people are trying to forget Binghton, is
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So like, they drive along.
I want to get out of this
why,
place.
Why am I remembering,
why am I remembering it? So I think it's wonderful. It yeah. has layers and layers of...
You can explain what you mean.
Or not. Right. I can just be like, why don't you...
And I love that a good shepherd has taken on iconic
yeah.
symbolism for all of Binghamton. I mean, for all... Binghamton.
Yeah. Here. I'll put it online, but there it
you
is
put
in
it
our
way
car.
Above on the top. That's a...
Yeah, so people can really
see
it.
You made that not a bumper sticker. You made that a... You put that on our actual car.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know. I've never done this before. It's my first one.
Yeah. You should let me do that.
Well, it's too late now. I put it on. If you take it off, you'll ruin it.
Yeah, okay.
I wanted people to see it. If they drive up close, they'll be like, oh, she's excited about her child being a national Latin scholar or something, but instead it'll just be... It's very cool. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but wait, what's going on in South Carolina? Or
okay,
did anything
so Skip
happen?
Adams, who was the bishop who sued us, is now the bishop of South Carolina, the Episcopal bishop of South Carolina, and he's taken over the reins, and he's trying to woo back Anglicans from
That's
their
really
churches
funny.
That are being, you know, the churches.
That's a bizarre thing to do.
He's leading the legal battle against these congregations, and he's trying to get people within those congregations to consider their, you know, their property and come back to the Episcopal Church.
That is the weirdest thing I've
well,
ever
he's having
heard.
His regional. He apparently had three regional meetings this last week, and they, you know, people want to keep their buildings. Those are beautiful buildings in South Carolina. I mean, you
yeah,
some great historic property. And so his thinking is, well, you know, we'll we can be together. Without having to agree with one another, we can have unity, not uniformity.
Oh, is that the...
That's the buzz line,
word.
Which, of course, you know, given the last General Convention, and actually the General Conventions prior to that, that's a load of...
I know, that's really funny. that's well-timed.
Of bovine excrement. Yeah, because what you have is this... now, the Episcopal Church... is a church in which any congregation can go ahead and have same-sex blessings, same-sex weddings, and I guess you're all supposed to just pretend that it doesn't matter and that it's okay that the congregation down the street is just
well, if you don't
leading
have
people to hell,
now,
and it's fine.
If you don't want to have them, aren't you on the edge of having to have them? So the whole idea that you could have your conscience is rapidly disappearing.
No, you don't have your... You, everything is right. Every congregation does what's right in its own in its own eyes. And Bishop Adams is not someone I would trust. Remember, he, you remember this conversation where he told us, look, we'd like to negotiate with you over the building and you giving us money in exchange for keeping your building, but we can't do that until you actually leave the Episcopal Church. So, I mean, we were going to leave anyway. We couldn't stay in good conscience. But he encouraged us to take the actual step to leave so that we could begin negotiations.
Right.
And then, when we were out, that's immediately when his tone changed. Yeah. And negotiations were not happening because we left the Episcopal Church. And then he filed a lawsuit, right? Then he wouldn't listen to our offers.
That coincided, interestingly, with the with the ascendancy of Catherine Jefferts Shorey. Right. So I thought the timing of that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Other people had also been trying to do deals who did want money. There was a sense in which people, bishops around the country, did want money and needed it.
Well, I think he thought he could get it without having to negotiate anything. He could get the property and the money.
Maybe,
he could get our assets and our property and not have to...
Right. But, I mean, we didn't know exactly why the tone changed. But
well, I don't know, but it didn't. It was uncanny.
It was uncanny on both counts.
Catherine Jefferts Shorey became presiding bishop in 2006. We didn't leave till 2007. And he was very friendly up until our departure.
Right.
The moment we left, his encouragement, using this protocol, everything became cold. We sent our two offers we sent forward. Just no counter offers, no, since they were negotioating, just
we don't like that one.
Then, remember, we tried very hard to meet with him.
Yeah.
And because we had been in friendly negotiations prior to our departure. And he finally agreed to meet with us. And usually we went into his office and had a nice sit-down conversation with him. And every time we'd met with him before, we'd come out feeling pretty good about the situation. And then this time he brings...
His lawyers.
Yeah. It was kind of like that scene in Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo and... Princess Leia and Luke walk. No, Luke wasn't there. He was with Yoda. But they walk into that room thinking they're going to meet somebody else, and there's Darth Vader standing there. All right. Well, have you seen that scene?
And then we open
the door, and there's this long table, just like in the scene. We open the door into the library where we're being led, and instead of meeting with just the bishop, we're meeting with the bishop and his chancellor and his lawyer and his canon of the ordinary. So. And they had papers for us to sign, agreeing to vacate our property.
Right.
So,
walk back out.
Yeah, walk back out. So again, all this to say is, don't try. I mean, maybe he's had a conversion to honesty in the days since we've been.
But he hasn't had a conversion to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
No.
So
pray for him that he will believe in Jesus, but don't trust him. Until he does,
and even then, it may take a little bit of sanctification.
It'd
be like if Trump became a Christian, it would take a really long time for it to work itself out.
Into every aspect of his life. So anyway, we should pray for our friends in South Carolina who, need support. I don't know what the legal situation is, but it doesn't look good from what I understand. And so they might be called on to lose their property, which is going to be really hard.
Terrible.
Yeah.
So terrible. Every time another church loses its property, I have like a week of feeling nauseated and tragic. They're sad. It's just like a physiological response whenever I read about another church having to walk away. It's just sick. It's sick, it's wrong, it's just unjust. There's a lot of injustice in the world going on right now. Injustice, there's a lot of things that are disordered and ugly. I think it's really awful. Even if you're sort of cheerfully going through it, it will stand out in your mind probably as a black mark on history. So
well, but good. Yeah, still, I mean, it was you know, you said it during our interview at GAFCON. It was a privilege to go through it. I mean, and we felt that during the whole process of losing our building, that this was something that God had given us. It was kind of an honor to be able to go through it and to have our property confiscated, like, you know, Hebrews 10.
Yeah.
There you are. You read that this happened to people in the first century, and it's happening to you, and it's you have some unity across centuries with them, and it's a, and you can, and so it also adds weight to what you say and do during that time. You know, how do you present yourself? Are you going to be angry and bitter and unforgiving, or are you going to be humble and preaching the gospel and forgiving? That's really important, not to come out of a situation like that looking angry and vengeful. The world looks at that. They see.
It's a real moment to be visible to the wider community.
Right.
And if you can be cheerful and sorrowful,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. We still run into people, when, you know, you say, who are you, or what do you do? And you say, oh, we, you know, we have a church on the south side, and we are, you know, we bought the old St. Andrew's building, and our first church, you know, oh, you're the one with the mosque.
People
in Binghamton, hashtag, remember?
Yeah.
Good Shepherd, and they might have known, you know, it was a really old church. They might have, a lot of people are like, oh, well, my, you know, great-grandmother went there, and, you know, or my sister was married there. You know, you'd run in the grocery store, and,
I mean, just,
you know, so
the optics were so, I mean, the issue of sexuality was back in 2007.
Isn't what
it is today. At the same time, though, the optics of a very wealthy diocese suing a poor church to take away its property did not go well here.
Right, that didn't play well.
Even among people who agreed with the diocese about the theology of the thing, it was just horrible. And our response to it had to be one of, okay, we're willing to do this, we're willing to lose. We love the people who are attacking us, we're praying for them, and we're hoping for their repentance. That stance said a lot to the people who are looking on.
Locally.
Yeah, yeah. And you have the same opportunity.
It's in the news. They're going to really be known. And it doesn't look good, you know, because the diocese takes over buildings, and then they're not Christian anymore.
They're not going to be able to fill them.
So you end up with a lot of beautiful churches that are empty,
mm-hmm.
and they're sold to mosques or whatever, houses, grocery stores. Not grocery stores, but brothel. I don't know. I heard of one church that became a nightclub. You know, it was an interesting space, and a nightclub person bought it.
It's better than a mosque, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is where we get into because I was like, oh, I hope the Sikhs buy it, but pick your idolatry.
Why would you want them to?
I don't know. I just was Sikhs. Well, they just seem more friendly than the.
But they're sending people to hell.
I know. You know, pick your. But a nightclub wouldn't be.
I mean, nightclub is regular people.
What, getting drunk and falling down, dancing?
Yeah, but it's better than worshiping a false god, I guess.
Well. How is it much
explicitly
different?
Explicitly worshiping false gods.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's not...
Well, so, yeah, you're, like, choosing between what...
Which is worse, right?
So, yeah. Anyway, we have to keep praying. And I think it's really hard... one thing it was hard for me to wrap around my mind around was the idea that God would be all right with us losing. You know, that defeat was somehow... fine with him, and you know, there's an incredible providence in the Christian being defeated in a worldly sense,
mm-hmm.
comes with providence that you don't experience when you're busy, you know, with all the winning, and I don't think that Christians in the West are, you know, they don't want to experience that because it's really uncomfortable. But it is a way to know God and have your, your spiritual relationship strengthened in a way that if you've won, you'll never know what that's like. And yeah. I wish that could go into the political sphere. I think, you know, when you're looking at candidates who profess to be Christian, and you think, well, they have to, at all costs, they have to win this election.
Yeah.
You know, the Christians have to win. Well, I mean, it's all right to lose, you know, yeah. And God takes care of you as you lose.
We were talking about yesterday in Christian Ed, the both on the left and on the, I guess, far right charismatic side of Christianity in America, there's this kind of need to make heaven be fully present here right now.
Yeah.
Right? So on the charismatic, far right charismatic side, or far, I wouldn't say right, but far charismatic, far wacko charismatic side, it's all the joys and benefits and blessings of heaven need to be ours now. So pleasure, money, health, all that.
You don't want to wait for heaven for any of those things.
They must come now. So we got to access them by faith, by you claiming and naming something and getting it. But then on the left, there's also the same thing. You know, we're going to be world savers. We're going to bring all of the peace and justice and goodness and lack of unfairness to the world right now through our own actions. And if you're not on board, then you don't know the gospel. Mm-hmm. Right, so because we Christians are the ones who are going to actually save the world, not Jesus.
Right.
And
what that discounts, that sort of righting wrongs immediately, is that when the Christian loses, mm-hmm. the world's that has the potential to overturn more, or for the world to see the cataclysmic effect of the gospel and God overturning mm-hmm. human mm-hmm. pride and sin. That's actually a better and more powerful witness than you getting what it is that you knew God was promising you,
yeah.
or you correcting some injustice. If you lose publicly, or you're shamed publicly, or you're you have the opportunity to forgive
yeah.
publicly, that it feels very painful and very small, but it actually is a really world-changing
yeah.
thing.
You know, like Jesus.
Like Jesus.
Who did that same thing
yeah.
on the cross, right?
But yeah. I think we discount it as one of the options yeah. on the table for world-changing, culture-changing.
Losing, dying.
Losing and yeah. dying yeah. as if you're, you know, and forgiving in your
yeah.
You're lost. In your defeat. You're defeated, you're cast down, you forgive, the world just sees that, and it doesn't, and marvels in some sense, doesn't yeah, really know what yeah. to make of it. So, nevertheless, I hope they don't lose.
No, I know.
I would
I know.
Love to see
It'd be great.
Skip Adams lose something. That would just make my day, but I'm not vengeful at all. Or anything like that. I just...
It's just hard to believe that they put him in charge of this diocese after what he did.
Yeah, it's really funny.
New York like lost like 30%
so
of its...
So much money. Like they have lost... Well, yeah, that's true. Speaking of defeat, they have been closing churches and
yeah.
losing money, and the Episcopal Church here is just not even on the map of any... Like if you want to destroy your denomination... This was a great model, a great way to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, anything else on that score?
No, just wanted to say we.
Hashtag remember Binghamton.
Yeah, yeah.
So we thought we would move from there to, okay, well, we were asked a question, and I think we bungled it. We gave like a bunch of answers that were not potentially very helpful, or not wrong, but. So we were asked, what are, post-marriage, so you do premarital counseling, but then post-marriage, what are some of the issues that really can cause real difficulty in marriage and maybe even potentially ruin a relationship, a married yeah. relationship? And we said money,
yeah.
which is true, and sex, pornography, also true, but we... didn't really mention the one that I think is actually more insidious and more difficult.
Yeah, so, that's communication, I think, is
that. Yeah, communication.
Yeah.
And, okay, as we all know from reading the internet this week, it's important in a marriage, the transformed wife tells us so, a person who we don't know who she is, we don't know what her theological training is, we don't know what kind of church she goes to, that's because I haven't read her blog very much, but we don't know why it is that she's teaching the Bible on the internet,
yeah,
on Facebook. She says that it's really important for women to learn from their husbands.
Why don't you read that little short section
there? In a godly and a submissive wife. Okay, it'll take me a second here, because we keep falling offline. Oh man, and I saved something and then it didn't save. I had it all set up.
And of course.
And I'm not online. It's important for a woman to live if she wants to be properly submissive, that includes her being very, very quiet in her marriage. I posted the little thing that she wrote. So if you go to the Transform Wife Facebook page, she has some blog posts, but she also has little handwritten notebook pages that have little nuggets of wisdom, I guess that's what you would say they are. Boy, our internet is really, really bad. You have to keep going down. Just keep going, keep going. Yes.
Okay, so one of the main characteristics of wifely submission is being quiet. We are called to have meek and quiet spirits, win him without a word, and be silent in the churches. God knows women have a tendency to talk too much, share our opinions too quickly, confront when we disagree, and argue to be right. We need to learn to be quiet and hold our tongues and not to say everything that is on our minds, but be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Support him in his leadership and honor him as your head. In this way, you will be a godly and submissive wife. Now, I like this. I mean, there are times,
you're a terrible princess, person.
In our
yeah,
marriage.
You don't need to condescend.
When I think I'm going to copy this and
no.
And keep it for myself when we need to. I like this part about God knows women have a tendency to talk too much.
God knows. God knows.
But this is a big thing because you're right.
This comes up in our premarital counseling.
Pornography and money and all those other things are big things, but they're big things because of the fact that people don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, and even some of the couples talked to us yesterday were saying, oh, yeah, we sometimes do our date night and sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we've said, okay, so the purpose of a date night, the law of the date night, which you should never break, is that the man sits and the woman talks.
Yeah.
Like
you listen.
You listen to your wife.
Right.
At least once a week.
Not that you don't
week.
Talk too. I mean, if you have something going on, you should talk too. You communicate with her, but the real importance is that you need to talk. You need to talk to me.
You need to listen to what I have to say. Like
right.
That's.
Right.
Really listen.
Because what happens if I don't? What happens if you, and this is, I don't think this is just unique to you. I think this is pretty much a female thing. Is it, what if you don't feel like your husband is listening to you, what happens?
Well, the big thing that doesn't happen is your moments of intimacy on the other side.
Well, right.
So a lot of men are like, I really wish that my wife would have sex with me more often. But, you know, I can't be bothered to listen to her, more than once a month. And so you could probably correlate, you know, yeah. Like how often do you manage to be together on that score by how often you manage to listen to her on the other score. The two things
are
connected.
Yeah.
And they ought to be connected. it's not a matter of a woman submitting to her husband in, say, in the bedroom, which is a weird and weird and weird thing for her to suggest. And then for the man not to listen to her on the, like...
What's a weird thing to suggest? That sex is an act of submission?
Yes, yes.
that's odd.
And yeah. Similarly, that not talking would be an act of submission. I mean, that being quiet and not speaking in your home,
I mean, yeah,
would be a submissive wifely act is just utterly, well, it's encouraged in other religions like Islam.
But it escapes the reality of the Christian home or the Christian marriage, which is supposed to be a walled, I mean, like there's, I forgot who said this, but yeah, a walled garden, where within that wall, within those walls, there's freedom. Right, there's liberty. So you, within the wall of the marriage, have utter freedom to tell me anything you're thinking, and to be naked with one another, and that's the kind of, and not just physically, and emotionally, spiritually, in every way, and that's the goal, really, because that creates a tighter bond and a tighter union. But if we're within this garden and you're saying, well, I can't say anything because my leader husband is really working hard, and I just don't want him to know I'm upset about anything, and my wife is submission called, and then what that just creates is bitter, imprisoned weirdness.
Well, and all the things that I might be that might be weighing on me, or right, that I might want to talk about are inconsequential and stupid.
Yeah,
that I don't have thoughts and feelings because I'm a woman.
Right.
By which we must mean a person stupid. Without yeah. A personality child. Or child, essentially, that ought to be instructed by a man and learn in such quiet submission that nothing is ever comes of it, you know, like,
or
no,
the man is just so wise, huh, or so naturally able to lead and to make decisions, and to that he has no need,
well, yeah,
of listening to what his wife might say, that he's just complete, he sees the right path in every situation, and his wife's talking would just be noise distracting him from his all-important duty of leading the family in a godly way, which is weird.
So
yeah.
Weird. Okay, because one could say from looking at the scripture, mm-hmm, that the purpose of marriage is for the, mm-hmm, one member of that marriage to know the other member. So one goal of marriage would be for the man to know,
yeah,
his wife,
right,
intimately,
right,
through perhaps language, words.
Right.
And similarly, the woman might want to know her husband when he talks,
right,
to her.
Yeah, what does it mean to cleave to or cling to your wife? It means you're in breaking from your parents. It's she becomes the one relationship that supersedes all others.
Which means you have to have a relationship,
yeah,
with her.
Yeah.
It's not you parenting a child forever, for 50 years, 80 years. You parent a child,
right,
forever, and then you both die.
Right. Well, I like what you said in your article about this, is that, you know, that God sent, you know, prophets to Israel, and then the prophets were part of Israel too. So it was Israel as, and the church as the bride of Christ isn't quiet. The church speaks. The church,
even when they speak
not
really
just
badly,
to the world,
like,
but to,
you know,
Jesus, they pray. That's what prayer is. You're speaking to Jesus. You're coming. You're developing a relationship. The church is developing a relationship with Him through prayer, worship, and sacrament, and through. It's not a quiet thing. Do we all go to church and just be quiet? I mean, no.
Well,
we,
yeah, though. I mean, I think we're all supposed to go to church and be quiet.
Well, no, I mean, but the church itself. Word,
yeah,
is a pretty important part of gathering for worship. And if the human marriage is just a reflection of the marriage between Christ and His church, it's...
Well, obviously that means that one person talks and the other person never talks. That's obviously what that means. You know, Jesus died to gather a bride. No, we should. Yeah, you're right. We should not have any prayer
because we need to be quiet and submissive.
Yeah.
So I'll read the scriptures,
and then we will sit.
I won't preach because
no.
No one should preach.
No one should preach.
Because that's the bride trying to figure out what the husband's saying.
Yeah, quietly.
You just let him talk.
Yeah. So we'll just read the scripture.
And sit
quietly. Actually, you know what? Let's not read it out loud. Let's just...
And don't pray. You cannot respond.
You cannot respond. So you just read it actually silently in your lap.
Right.
We'll all get together and we'll just...
Yes.
Well, yeah, maybe we could do this separately.
No coffee hour, because it would be...
That's a lot of talking. And you know who talks at coffee hour? Women.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, my word.
There's a lot of women talking
Talking at coffee hour. As you know, it's hard to get some women out of church because of all the talking. And as you know, women
are
to keep silent in churches.
Some men are exercising their leadership by waiting in the car in the parking lot. And their rebellious wives...
are in the church.
Talking.
Literally using words. And as we know, women are to be silent
right.
in the church, which
right.
I would think meant the building itself. So whenever you go near a church building, a woman should make sure and shut her trap, you know, for all reasons. Even
yeah.
don't ask where the restroom is, because that's words and stuff.
You can find it.
You can find it.
Pray. Ask God to show you.
No, you can't pray.
You can't do that.
it's absurd.
Yeah.
But what offends me about it is that this is how the Bible is being read. This person, and I assume that her husband and pastor are probably reading these and like empowering her to use language on the internet
to
instruct.
What is she writing? Why is she writing anything?
Right, she should be like.
Well, she's saying
virtually
older women should instruct younger women. Okay,
so you can talk to younger women.
On
but you
Facebook.
Know what?
Well,
there might be men who click on this
Facebook?
Page
right.
and see this.
And be taught or taught by it.
And are taught by it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm offended because of the way that the Bible... This, to me, as I said in my article, this kind of reading of the Bible is no better, more interesting than the person who reads Mark Twain and thinks that Mark Twain is racist.
Right.
You know, because you come out of here thinking that God... hates women, for one thing,
mm-hmm.
that men should hate their wives and make them be quiet, that women are children, they're not actually human, fully developed human people.
Not just hate their wives, just disregard them. I mean, just, you know,
if
my wife has something to say about this issue, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Who cares what she's thinking?
Okay,
this?
Similarly, though, yeah. the reason that everybody on the internet was freaking out is because of the, you know, she said that men liked
debt-free, tattoo-less,
virgins.
Right.
But the reason to be debt-free, really, is that
when you read the article, it's an argument against going to college.
Yes, for women. It's not actually
because
debt,
college is when you get in debt, and college is when you lose your virginity, and college is when you, I guess, you get your tattoos. Is that? I did get my tattoo in college, so I maybe. Yeah.
Well, I'm offended. I didn't
well,
want to marry a man who.
Yeah, men. Apparently, women are okay with
the tattoos.
Tattooed. Do men get in debt when they go to college?
I don't. You know what? I don't think
I guess
they
I don't.
Do. I think the state pays for the men to go to college, and they don't come out with debt. Obviously, just women. Men should go to college.
And accrue debt.
And accrue debt.
And so all the things she was saying about what the reason, when you read the article about why women shouldn't go to college, everything they say could equally apply to a man, right? So the temptation towards sexual promiscuity,
No, men don't struggle with that at all.
Not in college, never. And then the debt, of course, and, you know, I guess tattoos too, I guess so. I'm not sure where the tattoos come
from.
It's
weird.
Why the tattoos, that
trinity of...
she like have something like really
issues.
In her craw about tattoos? I mean, I guess there's...
It says in Leviticus or somewhere
old,
not to
yes,
get...
Yes, but that's an old covenant law,
so
which
she,
Christ is fulfilled and now...
No, I don't think so. I don't think that Christ has like done anything except for tell the church to be quiet.
Well, I think the tattoos had to do with pagan worship, but maybe I'm... I don't want to get into the tattoo
question.
Yeah,
you don't want to like...
let's not open the tattoo Pandora box at this point.
I think we should pontificate. Do you think women should go to college? Or should they
learn well,
in all quietness?
I think that's... individual people can decide whether they go to college or not. I do think it's... like we've talked about this before. There's way too much pressure on everybody to go to college. And some people probably shouldn't go to college because they can make a more successful life financially outside of college. But some people should, both men and women. Like some men are not going to be good with their hands, and unless they go to college, they're going to starve because they have to learn to do something with their minds. they have to learn how to, like, you know, calculate numbers or...
Calculate numbers.
Or teach things.
Some
stuff. Yeah, or do, you know, intellectual pursuits, because otherwise, like me, I would
There's
have no...
There's nothing for
I
you.
I had to go to college, right, because I can't do... You see the house. I can't do anything around the house. It doesn't break or look stupid.
Some of the things are okay.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, there's some women the same way who are very smart, who should go to college and should develop their brain.
I don't know. I think women should not do things like math. And unless she's
math
just...
Math is hard, as Barbie.
Yeah, just unless she just is able to calculate how many gallons of stock...
That's the thing. How is she supposed to be a Proverbs 31 woman if she doesn't do math? I mean, you're running the bit. If you're a Proverbs 31, I'm sitting in the gate, and you're out there doing the business work.
Okay, but if you continue to read The Transformed Wife, she doesn't really mention Proverbs 31. She has long screeds about how you need to be oriented around the house and, like, yeah, only work from home and never go outside of the home to do any kind of business.
Well, then how can you be doing your business?
You can't be a Proverbs 31.
And your whatever. And your
ships from Phoenicia or whatever.
Right. How are you supposed, like, to do that? Because the Proverbs 31 woman is probably, it sounds like a really rebellious...
I know, yeah.
Hagedon.
Know your limits. Right. I mean, how... You know what? That's true. The whole Transformed White Facebook page is like that video.
Women?
Know your limits.
You should... I'm sure everyone's seen it.
I'm sure everyone's seen it.
Yeah.
Or the one where she learns to drive. Oh, blow it, she says, I'm going to try, and then she backs into a stone wall. Women shouldn't drive. I mean, it's so boring. What a horrible... Okay, and I just want to say one thing that really I loved, I probably said this already, but at GAFCON, so the hotel we were in seemed to be a sort of center of Orthodox Jewish relationship building exercises. So the lobby would always be full of older men and women, Orthodox, obviously married to each other, sitting together, having coffee or tea or something, or a glass of wine, you know, because Jewish people can drink wine, talking. Like, I would sit and watch, and the woman would talk. And then the man would say something, and then the woman would, and they would converse together.
And there was a chaperone.
Well, no. Then you go up a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And to this sort of place where there is no alcohol, and you just have a nice big view window, and there would be an older Orthodox Jewish couple sitting, and then in all the sort of little groups of chairs ahead of them, there would be awkward, silent, speaking of silence,
female and male, Jewish, young people.
Young people, obviously on a sort of a dating...
Courting ritual.
And in many cases, the two would be sitting silently, eyes cast down. They have to sit there for a certain amount of time, and then they can all go home. But at the end, I think you have to pick a spouse. But what really impressed me is how many couples... Orthodox Jewish couples I saw talking to each other in different contexts. The two talking together. Walking together, talking together. So in, you know, Islam or in Africa, the men and women are completely separated. They just have no overlap in their lives. The woman walks several paces behind the man. He would never talk to her as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
He has friends, she has friends. Their spheres are completely separate.
Yeah.
And then, okay, in the U.S., I think... people are busy. People are just busy. You don't see obviously married people sitting quietly over a glass of wine just talking to each other. You see people trying to hook up. You see groups of friends. I just, the sheer number of married couples talking, both members, was really interesting.
And I think, okay, so going back to the thing I started the conversation off, if I think pornography and money problems and fights about various things, I think, would be lessened by huge percentage points if that kind of practice were intentionally taken in every marriage. So a Christian marriage, you know, you sit down, you have those conversations about your life, and you confess to your wife, yeah, okay, I'm I'm really having a hard time with pornography. Boom, it's a public thing. You and your wife can talk about it and deal with it. Or let's talk about how we're spending money, because I'm really, instead of just having this buzz of irritation and anger building up on one party or the other, you talk about it, you bring it out in the open, you get it into the sphere of public knowledge in the marriage anyway, and deal with it.
But if you're not talking, but it's only possible to do that if you've talked about a lot of other things that aren't quite so heavy. You know, if you have a bedrock of just lots and lots and lots of talking where you tell each other about a lot of inconsequential things, you know, and one party or the other doesn't necessarily, you know, it goes back and forth. Sometimes one person will have a lot to say and sometimes the other person will.
Yeah.
And you build, you have a whole vocabulary that you develop together about life.
Yep.
And then when you have to talk about something really difficult and terrible, then you
have the bedrock of established communication. It's easy. It's not like now I've got to talk to my wife about this big, huge thing that just has been plaguing my life for the last year, but we haven't talked because I've been working and she's been working and we've both been going our separate ways. So now I've got to tell her about, you know, my pornography here. Now I've got to tell her about...
And then at which point you're not going to do it.
Right.
You're just going to not do it. You know, you're going to just pretend that it's not there. You're never going to face it, and then you're going
to... It's much easier never to face it.
Right.
And then it blows up one day.
So, no, you have to talk to each other. And, you know, I don't know. I think that women should be encouraged to grow up and be human people. Similarly, men should be encouraged to grow up, you know, be a human person, leave your parents' basement before you're 30, and be a person that a human person that another a woman would be interested in being with.
Right.
And then don't the women Christians should not bring up women to be childish, infants, thoughtless.
You know, the value that seems to be promoted by this woman who wrote that article is that, you know, your daughter should be raised utterly dependent on their father, and then they should be utterly dependent on their husband. So you kind of transfer dependencies over, which, you know, yes, a daughter, just like a son, should be dependent on their parents for a period of time, but... But
it's such a, you know, you can have interdependency, you know.
Yeah,
you can
that's what it is. It's not a childlike dependence on your husband.
You should have this sort of familial, even societal, cultural interdependency where one person can depend on another and be relationally bound to that person. And of course, you don't always have your life together, but that goes back and forth. Even the parent-child relationship at some point has to sort of switch where the child cares for the parent, you know, and I'm speechless. It's so bizarre. It's such a truncated, flat picture of human people, and it's not in the Bible. You really can't find it in the Bible. God is desperate for Israel to be interested in him enough to talk, enough to pray. It's partly her silence, her unwillingness to engage, that as you read through the prophets, God finds ultimately
she's undoing. Off talking to other gods.
She's talking to everybody else that she can talk to. She's probably got tattoos and, you know, she's got a lot of debt. And it's God. Jesus came to use words to recall to himself people who would talk to him.
Yeah.
That it's like missing the entire point of the Bible. These little posts.
Yeah.
You strain out the gnat and swallow a camel. It's really awful. Anyway, I think I've said a lot of things. Do you have anything else?
No, I mean, we are going back to the dependency question. We're dependent on each other. I mean, when you're gone for, you've been gone traveling a lot this last summer, and it's been hard for me because I don't have any, I need to talk to you about things, and you're not around. So it's been very difficult, you know, and you cultivate this kind of mutual, like you say, interdependency rather than one person depending on
one either, person just
waiting, you know, like a child, for the other person to, I don't know.
Lead. So, I mean, okay, right. One thing about having children too, I don't know, this should be my parting shot. I don't know. If people are honest with themselves, listening to a child talk can be one of the most boring, idiotic, annoying things in the world. Yeah. And children go through stages where they have nothing to say, and you have to endure. They want to say it. You have to endure. You have to train them up to talk. The idea that you would enter into the marriage, a marriage in that state of boring, uneducated, flat infants, childishness, and then your husband would have to sort of make up the gap.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not marriage.
No.
That's awful. I mean, of course, I love all my children and I listen to them and I never ever say, well, I need you to stop. No, but the idea of being married to
someone with whom you'll have childlike conversations is hellish. I would hate that.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, I feel like we've
beaten that horse.
Said some things. and we'll come back next week, won't we? We'll be back next week. So thank you for listening.